You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This week, Tea and Sympathetic Magic continues. Before I get started, thanks to everyone who donated and signal boosted to the incredibly successful Authors for Fieries fundraiser that I mentioned last week. And special thanks to Catherine and Adelaide, who were the top bidders for my two auction items, which brought in over $400 between them. Feeling pretty pleased with that. Okay, so today I launched a Patreon special offer for the upcoming publication of Unreal Alchemy. I again mentioned this last week. This is the first paperback collection of Belladonna University stories. It has a new cover by Wolf Sparrow Covers. It's really cool. We're getting the whole series done. I can't wait to share the later ones. It contains the first four Belladonna U stories. So Fake Geek Girl, Unmagical Boy Story, The Bromances, and The Alchemy of Fine. The first three have all have audio versions right here on the Sheep Might Fly podcast. And The Alchemy of Fine is the prequel How the Band Got Together story, which first appeared as a Patreon-exclusive bonus story for subscribers. So this month, if you support my Patreon for $1, you'll receive the ebook of the repackaged collection, Unreal Alchemy. Actually, at the end of this month is when I'm sending that out. You also get access to a lot of other previously released ebooks. Those who pledge $15 or higher will receive an early signed paperback edition of Unreal Alchemy 2 months before the book goes on general sale, and a lot of other bonus rewards. I'm actually hoping to put out several paperback versions of books this year that were previously only available as ebooks, including Tea and Sympathetic Magic and its upcoming sequel, The Frostfair Affair, which you will hear for the first time later this year on the Sheep Might Fly podcast. But for now, Tea and Sympathetic Magic, Chapter 2. The only bright spot of this whole wretched house party business was that the Duke's main country residence, Storm North, was, as the name suggested, on the north side of the Isle of Storm, only a short boating journey from the Agnew estate on the Isle of Tyme. Neame found boating almost as tiresome as town and society. There was a wretched, drawn-out jolting about the whole business, not to mention the harried running about with chests of clothes and sails and whatnot. If only ladies were allowed the gentleman's prerogative of popping about from isle to isle by portal magic, instead of being squashed into pretty swan-shaped boats and lace-edged peacock carriages, the thought of marrying a duke might not be so loathsome to Neame. But this was the world they lived in, one where ladies travelled by the slow path, while gentlemen were allowed shortcuts. All the better to trap you with, my dear. House parties were even more intense vehicles of the marriage market than garden parties. Having committed to a set period of time, a week, a fortnight, sometimes as much as a month, you were then shuttered up in a grand estate, chaperoned within an inch of your life, and placed beneath a magnifying glass of scrutiny by said chaperones, while you engaged in the traditional mating dance of gentlemen and gentlemen's daughters. Henry Jupiter, Duke of Storm, was clearly of a mind to be married, if he was bothering to host a house party of his own instead of hurling himself upon the hospitality of his chums. He was smart enough not to invite either of his living aunts to take on the vital role of hostess, which would have fallen to his own matchmaking mamma, the Dowager Duchess Antiope, were she still in the land of the living. Still, this was Henry Jupiter, whose attention span was so short he often commissioned a new wardrobe in the middle of a season because he was bored with the colours he had liked only a month earlier. It was by no means guaranteed that he would continue in the market for a wife if a suitable one did not win his eye instantly. After all, a duke's life was one of wealth and freedom, without a mamma alive to harry him about the succession, He might put off matrimony for a decade or more. Mnemosyne had an awful vision of the future, should she remain on the shelf. Once she reached an appropriately hopeless age, like 28, she would be in the ideal position to manage Henry's house parties and other personal events. No need to hire a hostess with a spinster cousin at your beck and call. She would thus be expected to spend most of her time either in town, guarding his social diary and batting young gold diggers away with a stick, or lurching from one island to the next in boats and carriages to keep up with his whims. She might as well marry him if that were the case. One gilded cage was much the same as another. Neame had no objection to marriage. She simply wanted a husband more biddable and less cosmopolitan than the grandiose Henry Jupiter. A gentleman's son who liked books and did not insist she go boating more than once a year was her personal ideal. Unfortunately, those sorts of gentlemen weren't allowed anywhere near her, thanks to the calculating ambition of Mrs. Galatea Seaborne and her determination that her only daughter marry a husband of note. Having a new friend in the house might make the whole situation less dire. A word in the ear of His Grace's hired hostess and godmother, Lady Lovage, had the desired effect. Miss Letty Agnew was added to the wait list of the house party, which proved lucky when one of the invited guests, a foreign countess, whom many suspected of being a secret jewel thief, became ill on the road and never made it to Storm North. If it was Neame awaiting the possibility of a last-minute invitation, she might have suspected her mamma of engineering the Countess's complaint, but Lady Agnew was all innocence as she escorted Letty to the room beside Neame's, shaking the travel salt from the hem of her cloak. Letty herself looked flustered and embarrassed, but not totally mortified, which was the best one could hope for, given the circumstances. Truly, the greatest achievement of Neame's life thus far had been convincing her own mamma that her presence as chaperone at house parties would do more harm than good to her marriage prospects. Instead, she hired Mrs. Paula Days to do the honours, a quiet soul who was a lady novelist in her spare time and, as one would hope in a professional chaperone, highly adept at getting one out of awkward social situations. The first supper of the house party was amiable enough. The invited ladies and gentlemen circled each other with polite coos, never forgetting that their role was to allow the Duke to shine. There were five eligible ladies in their party, and Henry had picked four hearty but not too threatening fellows as his official chums, as well as several gentlemen from the village, to make up the numbers with the chaperones at mealtimes. It was exactly like every other first supper of every house party Neame had ever attended, until she excused herself to replace a slightly blancmange-stained glove and found a man searching her bedchamber. They had not been introduced, though he was at the supper table earlier, one of the extra gentlemen, clearly not intended to be of interest to the eligible ladies. A secretary, she assumed, or a solicitor, someone in trade, welcomed into Henry's home as a trusted employee or friend. He dressed in dark grey, with a tightly tucked cravat, several years behind the fashion. Caught with his hand between the pallets on her bed, the man paused for only a moment, and then stood with polite grace. He was not handsome. He had what Aunt Hecate would call an intelligent face, not as a compliment. It occurred to Neame that in this situation, a polite lady ought to scream, though the ramifications of such a noise were bound to be irksome to them both. The man held up both hands. "My apologies for the intrusion. I am here on the Duke's business." "Believe me," said Neame, before she could properly think out her retort, "the Duke of Jupiter has no business in my bedsheets." She felt the flush take over her face almost instantly. The curse of the Seabourns was that their red gold hair always came with pallid complexions, prone to blushing and freckles at the slightest provocation. The latter could sometimes be bleached away with milk and magic. The former, not so much. "So I guessed," said the man with a quirk of his mouth. "Miss Seabourn, are you aware that you are the only eligible lady in this household whose bedchamber was not rife with baubles, gewgaws, poppets, and cursed dollies, intended to charm the heart of our friend the Duke?"
"Oh, that's who you are," said Neame in some relief. "You're the spellcracker."
"Mama said His Grace had hired someone to deal with all that necessary business. She was most disappointed." Not that it made any difference. Neame had long ago learned to check her suitcase 3 times for unwarranted magical interference before she went anywhere near her cousin the Duke or any other high-ranked gentleman. It was in everyone's best interests. Truly, a magically talented mama was a terrible thing to endure.
"Mr. Charles Thornbury," said the spellcracker, nodding his head in brisk greeting. "Am I to understand that you do not wish to employ any unfair means in winning the hand of the Duke? It's remarkably sporting of you, I must say."
"Not at all," said Neame calmly. "If there was an easy magical means to ensure I did not win the hand of Cousin Henry, you may rest assured that I would employ it without guilt." She did not miss the expression that crossed Mr. Charles Thornbury's face for a moment, as if he was impressed. She refused to be warmed by such attention. Clearly Thornbury spent most of his professional time being disappointed by the behaviour of refined ladies. A brief reprieve in his regard was nothing to write home about. "In that case, Miss Seabourn," said the spellcracker, clicking his heels as he bowed, "I take my leave. There are a few more beds to be divested of magical items before my evening's work is over."
"Don't let me keep you," she replied, equally politely.
It was the first time she had ever conversed with a man privately, and when the door closed behind him, Neame had to admit to herself, just for a moment, that it was rather thrilling.
Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly, find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. This is a particularly good month to join Patreon because of my aforementioned special offer. See you next week for more tea and sympathetic magic.